Time now for NHL Hour with Bill Clement and Commissioner Gary Bettman. NHL Home Ice, XM 204.
And welcome aboard, everybody. It's the NHL Hour. We are live from the NHL store powered by Reebok in the heart of Manhattan. You're listening to us on NHL Home Ice, XM 204 and NHL.com. If you have a question for Gary Bettman, the National Hockey League Commissioner, here's the number. It's 877-645-6696, our email address, NHLHour at NHL.com. Now, I said we are live from the NHL store powered by Reebok. Actually, I am live from here. I looked for a fathead of the commissioner to have in his chair. All I could come up with, Gary, is a crummy little poster off the wall of the studio, so I at least put that. Greg's looking, he's teeing it up over there. Well, all I know, Gary, is that you are in Utah. Is that correct?
That would be correct, Bill.
Where?
I would like
Where
to
are
be
you?
With
I have
you.
No idea what you're doing.
I'm actually in the studios of KPCW-FM in Park City. I was out here for a conference and some meetings, and I didn't want to miss our afternoon break together. So we made these arrangements, and we'll see how good the technology is.
It's holding up so far. Now, see, all along, I thought you were out there to tackle the triple black diamond runs.
No, I should be so lucky.
Not today.
Maybe, do I ski? Oh, yes. I ski a lot.
Do you?
Oh, I used to ski a lot when I was younger, and I had other jobs. skiing's a little inconsistent with our season. But
it's funny how much more you had more time when you had jobs. Now you have no time because you have a job.
I have the job, and
somebody just
asked me how is it out there, and I said I wouldn't know. I haven't been outside, but it looks nice through the window.
What's the conference about?
Yeah, it's an investment conference. A lot of business people.
Oh, it's a personal trip?
No. It's a business trip.
Okay. That means the NHL jet took you out there.
What NHL jet? We were on a panel, the four commissioners, those of us who were fortunate enough to see each other a couple of weeks ago in Washington, actually put on a panel together. Now and then we take our act on the road. How have you been?
Everybody get along. I've been
I was
good.
In Chica- I Thank was you. In Chicago. More importantly, I was in Chicago yesterday. And there was a.
You mean more important than how I've been?
No. More important about okay. than what I'm doing. I spent the day in Chicago with the organization, John McDonough, the new president. And it's really incredible the buzz and the excitement and the reinvigoration of that storied franchise. And they played a pretty fun game last night in front of a pretty good crowd.
You were a pretty quotable guy coming out of Chicago. TSN.ca this morning, the headlines read, Bettman likes outdoor game in Chicago. Roger Sportsnet.ca said NHL eyes Wrigley Field for outdoor tilt. Now, ESPN.com toned it down a little bit. They said Chicago on list for next outdoor game.
I think the toned-down version is much preferable and more accurate. I was asked repeatedly, and I did a lot of media yesterday in Chicago. Everybody asked the question, can't we have an outdoor game at Wrigley or somewhere else in Chicago? And a lot of that, to his credit, has been pushed by John McDonough, the new president of the Blackhawks, who used to be the president of the Cubs. And he has been a passionate supporter of the notion. I do believe, and we've discussed this before, that we will do some future outdoor games. I don't think we're going to overdo it. We don't want to do that because we want to keep them special. And I mentioned that obviously Chicago will get consideration. Chicago's a great city. It's a great sports town. There's no shortage of venues, although we would have to check them out. And so I think the passion that John displayed in his own marketplace and in his persistence with me, which I find commendable and admirable, probably let the headlines get a little bit ahead of themselves. It probably will be a good place at some point, but we are not ready to commit to time or place yet in terms of what the future may hold for outdoor games.
Because of John McDonough's history with the Chicago Cubs, and he's now the president of the Hawks, you can imagine that Wrigley Field would get into the equation. Is there a capacity criterion for the Winter Classic, provided there is one? I mean, Wrigley seats 41,000.
Well, the answer to your question is the same reason that we can't make definitive statements. we haven't done any homework yet. We haven't done the due diligence. We haven't run any models. We don't even know if the rink configuration would work there because we haven't checked. We're going to have to start figuring out what it is we want to do if we want to do a game for next year. And if we're going to do a game for next year, there are a number of places, including Chicago, that will get considered. But to go beyond what I've just said is a wee bit premature.
This is the NHL Hour, NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman. I'm Bill Clement. We're getting ready to take your calls. Our number, 877-645-6696. The email address, nhlhour@nhl.com. If you haven't done the due diligence on the Winter Classic or a future Winter Classic, is there even a format in place for how the city will be chosen? I mean, is it going to be like an Olympic bid? What's the process for deciding?
Well, the first process is interest. And then feasibility of possible venues and a variety of market factors. We did our homework and debriefed off of what we did in Buffalo. And while it was a spectacularly good event for us, we've learned from it. And there are obviously ways that we can be even more buttoned down, particularly as it relates to things like ice condition and the amount of time that we need to get set up. But we haven't yet gotten to the point where we're ready to begin a formal process.
I think we're ready, formal or otherwise, to take calls. People must really want a weather report out in Utah because the port is completely lit up. You set
to go,
love
Gary? It. Let's do it.
Yeah, man.
Doug in Edmonton, you're on with Bill and Gary, XM 204.
Thank you very much for taking my call, guys. Gary, I think you're doing a wonderful job with the NHL, and I think you're a great spokesman. Not trying to pick up too much, but...
Well, that's okay. We'll take that from the first call. Keep going. You're on a roll.
Okay. I just had a few quick points, and I'd like to get your opinions on them. First, I really hope that the league doesn't go with advertising on goalies' jerseys. Second, I am a fan of the shootout overtime, but I'm not a fan of the points awarded at the end of the game. I was just wondering if the league has ever thought of going with a full period of 4-on-4 hockey where the winner takes the 2 points. If there is a tie, they split a point apiece. And I forget what the third point is.
Okay. Well, let me try and respond to both of them. We've never considered putting advertising on goalies or skaters' sweaters. That story and the suggestion didn't come from us, and I believe didn't come from the Players Association. And so I'm not sure how a story got that much legs that really wasn't something that we had been actively or even passively considering. With respect to the overtime and shootout point formulation, we've had numerous discussions over the years with the competition committee, and when we went to the shootout, we really considered three different formats. The one that we have, we talked a little bit about 3 points for a regulation win, 2 points for a shootout or overtime win, and 1 point for an overtime or shootout loss. And the last possibility we considered was 2 points for a win no matter how it was achieved. And the concern with the two that we ultimately chose not to go forward with, and this was done in full consultation with the players on the competition committee, was a concern that if there was too much at stake, once you got a goal up or 2 goals up in the third period, the team that was up would simply shut it down. And what we were looking to do was encourage more lead changes, more scoring chances, more offense, and have a more wide open game. And if you look at the standings and you knocked out the overtime loss or shootout loss points, in fact, while it might move a couple of positions, for the most part, it wouldn't change the standings a whole lot, and it might even tighten them up. What is remarkable, when you look at the competitiveness of the league right now, with the exception of two teams, everybody's either in the playoffs or within 10 points of the playoffs. And considering we're in the first week of March, that is amazing, but it's not all due to the extra point. Take a look at the standings and you'll see what I mean. Seth from New York, You're on with Bill and Gary. This is XM 204. What can we do for you?
Hi, guys. I'm a big-time hockey fan. I'm a season ticket holder for the New York Rangers. My question has to do with the Rangers and the what you guys are doing as far as playoffs, because the Rangers, for the ticket prices, I don't know if you've seen, they're charging more for playoffs than we pay for the regular season, for a full season. And I was just wondering if the NHL was thinking of doing anything, because, us regular fans, at some point, as ticket prices go up, we're not going to be able to afford it. And I was just wondering if there's any thought of what...
I think having ticket prices that are affordable, particularly so families can go, is important. I'm not aware of what the Rangers playoff ticket pricing is. We don't approve it. We don't set it. Each club is free to set whatever it believes that its ticket prices should be, based on a variety of factors, including prevailing market conditions. So if you have a concern, you should address it to your season ticket representative. Mark, in Los Angeles, you're with Bill and Gary on XM 204. What can we do for you?
Well, I'm a bit of a Rain Man when it comes to statistics, and I'm curious to know if it's ever...
Yeah.
Well, I'm curious to know if it's ever been discussed to change the methodology as to giving goaltenders wins or losses, those that come in relief and kind of accidentally give up a goal that turns out to be the game-winning goal, despite the fact that the goaltender never had a chance to win the game. That's one scenario. And I'm sorry, I'll take your answer to that.
Oh, that please indulge me on that. That keeps me from forgetting. That's nothing that we've ever had any discussions on, and in fact, this is the first time that I can recall this ever having been raised as an issue. Bill, have you ever heard of this issue before?
Yeah, it is kind of quirky. I'm not sure that I could offer another alternative right now. For instance, the Flyers and the Rangers game the other day, both starting goalies were pulled. It was the first time this year that neither of the starting goalies was involved in a decision. But if a goalie comes in and happens to be in net for the winning goal, he gets the win regardless of the score when he came in. So it doesn't seem that equitable, but I'm not sure I have a viable alternative. Maybe our caller does. No, he's
Mark,
gone.
What do you okay. got? Mark, what's your second question? What happened
to
Mark?
I think Mark's gone, Gary. We're going to have to fire ahead here.
Steve.
Mark has gone to figure out a scenario. He's gone to figure out a scenario.
If he figures it out, I hope he calls us back. Steve in New York, you're on with Bill and Gary, XM 204.
It's an honor, Commissioner, to speak to you.
Well,
I wanted
you for
to find
in.
Out if you're ever going to go back to the whites at home and the darks on the road, or maybe have a quarterly, like I've seen the last few nights, Ottawa's been wearing their jerseys on the road, and in San Jose had their whites at home last night. Is there any kind of way you're going to formulate that to make it the whites home like the other sports and the darks on the road, or are you going to stay back with the darks at home and the whites on the road?
Actually, this was ultimately a decision made by the clubs. We had a number of discussions at the board level about it. We took a number of votes, and the consensus was to leave it the way it is. We even talked about the possibility of having each club decide which color they would wear at home, and then have the visiting team adjust. And based on the amount of travel and the various road trips, everybody just decided leave it the way it is. And for any particular games, teams are free to agree to make a swap. It is something that was discussed extensively, and the clubs concluded to leave it where it is with the darks at home for most games. In the playoffs, I believe each club, when it's at home, will have the choice to elect before the beginning of the series what sweaters it wants to wear at home, and then the visiting team would then adjust, and you don't have the same issues in terms of long road trips in multiple cities. You'll be able to just bring one set of sweaters as the visiting team.
Gary, Jason, for years it was white at home or light at home. What led to the change to go to the darks at home?
Interestingly enough, if I recall correctly, there was a sense that the team's dark jerseys was the better jersey, and that the home fans should see the better jersey of the home team.
Gotcha. More colorful. I understand.
You can debate the point, and it's one, believe it or not, that got a disproportionate amount of discussion at a couple of board meetings. Jason in Ontario, you're on with Bill and Gary. This is XM 204.
Hello, Mr. Batman, Mr. Clement. Oh, my goodness. I'm not sure. I'm kind of nervous.
Don't be nervous. We don't bite.
Well, yeah, I realize that. I actually listen to your podcast every week and look forward to it like no tomorrow. I've got two real quick points, because I know you get a lot of callers, and I love this. This is an unbelievable medium to be able to talk to yourself. My first point being, is there any thought to giving the person who turns a unsportsmanlike penalty, not only the check from behind, say it be a 4 minutes, but for the person who's turning, give that guy a 2 minute, because he's putting himself at danger? And where I'm going with that is minor hockey only penalizes the youngster who hits someone from behind, and what they're doing quite often is emulating what they see on TV. And up in Canada, obviously everyone plays hockey at a passion that's different than probably anywhere else in the world. And I'm just concerned about the kids continually, as they get faster and stronger and grow, they turn because they don't want to take the hit from the larger player. And if they saw it on TV, hey, you know what, that's unsportsmanlike. You know, it might save, you know, Patrice Bergeron from getting a career-ending hit, because I believe he turned, unfortunately, and it might really affect his career. My other real quick point that I got to say, boy, oh boy, I can't believe I'm talking to you, is the fact that with the NHL on NBC, they do an unbelievable job broadcasting the games. My concern is, and I realize why you do it, or at least I think I do, the afternoon games, being that you do it at a time when the weather is getting better, most people actually want to be outside in the afternoon, and then they go into their homes at night. And unfortunately, that eliminates people from being outside when the weather gets good, which brings down the possible number of eyeballs. Now, I realize prime time, et cetera, it makes it difficult to allow people to be able to see the games when, you know, money and everything else. But I'm just concerned, mainly reason being I'm a huge Penguin fan for 20-plus years, and it just kills me when they play afternoon games, because I have to PVR it so that I can watch it at night, because my children, not only when I come home from work on Sundays, but they want to be outside and play.
Gotcha. Let me try and respond to both questions. With respect to penalizing the player who turns when he gets hit from behind, I think that's pretty tough to penalize the so-called victim, particularly, and if I'm visualizing the Bergeron hit in my head correctly, when you have a player who's trying to make a play, he's really not necessarily focusing on where he's about to be hit. While surely he should be aware of what's going on around him and protect himself, I'm not sure it's fair when a guy's trying to make a play and he gets hit from behind to also assess him a penalty. With respect to NBC playing afternoon games, unlike the great tradition that's over 50 years old in Canada with Hockey Night in Canada on Saturday nights, there's a tradition in the United States where most sports is televised on the networks on weekend afternoons. That's not just a function of hockey. That's virtually all sports, some limited exceptions for some really highly rated programming like Sunday and Monday Night Football. But for the most part, the bulk of playoffs in sports and the bulk of regular season games in all sports are put on in the afternoon. And a lot of our clubs in the United States also like playing afternoon games, because in terms of the audience that they attract in the building, it's an opportunity for families, particularly children, to go. And so it's really a question of balancing what works in terms of the sports culture in the United States and many of our markets. Bill, anything you want to add?
No, I think those points are well taken. I understand when the weather changes, but at some point, we all have options and we all have choices to make. We just keep our fingers crossed that the majority of people choose hockey versus anything else that they got going on.
That's exactly right. Tom in Houston, you're on with Bill and Gary on XM 204.
Hi, Gary. How you guys doing today?
We're good. How are
good,
you?
Thanks.
How are things in Houston?
It's rainy. It's getting cold. I got to say, Gary, you don't get enough credit. You do a great job. And I had a question for you. I know you guys used to, during exhibition games, you used to travel, you know, to different cities. And quite a few years ago, we had the Lightning versus Capitals here in Houston. And I was wondering if you guys had any plans for preseason games to come back to Houston.
Actually, what is scheduled by clubs is done on a club-by-club basis. The league doesn't set the preseason schedule. We leave it to our clubs. And they go to places depending on the availability of buildings, the desirability of promoters, and their willingness to stage these events. And so if we haven't been playing exhibitions in Houston, it probably means that either nobody's interested in promoting a preseason game there, or none of our teams have been induced enough to want to go there. Zach in New York, you're on with Bill and Gary. This is XM204.
Hey, guys. Good to talk to you. Just had a question about DirecTV. I have all the XM channels come on DirecTV in the 800s, except for the NHL Network. There's music channels and also the Opie and Anthony channel, but there's no NHL Network. And I was wondering if there were any plans to do that or what, because right now I only have XM in my car, but sometimes I want to listen to Phil Esposito if I'm at home eating a sandwich.
Actually, I can answer that question because I have the same setup you do at home. I believe that not all of the XM channels are on DirecTV. I believe it's only a partial, and we're not the only one that isn't included on XM. What I did is I installed a receiver in my house to go along with all the other components I had so I can get XM in my house. They're not too expensive. And if you're already a subscriber, I'm not even sure if they cut you a special deal on the second unit. But that's the best way to do it. The other thing you can do, since you have DirecTV, is go to Channel 215 and watch the NHL Network. A shameless
nothing shameless when you're the commish. We're going to step out and take a break. We hope to have Mike Milbury with us shortly, former Boston Bruin, former general manager of the New York Islanders, and currently an analyst with just about everybody that's televising hockey. That is Mike Milbury coming your way on the NHL Hour on NHL Home Ice XM 204 and NHL.com.
Lying in bed, just like Brian Wilson did. Well, I had. I'm lying in bed just like Brian Wilson did. So I'm lying here, just staring at the ceiling tight.
Gary, that had to be your request.
Bare Naked Ladies. I love it. Great song.
You
have you ever seen them in concert?
No, and somehow I missed the one in St. Paul at the All-Star game. I know you were there, but you got to start getting commission on their sales. You're their number one fan.
Well, I hardly think that's the case. They have lots of fans, but, you know, I have an eclectic taste in music. Next week we're going to move into The Doors and Grateful Dead and shake people up a little bit.
Yeah, baby. Listen, we want to thank our callers in advance for your patience. We're going to take a little detour here because our special guest has arrived, Gary.
Mike Milbury, how are you?
I'm doing well, Gary. How are you?
Good. Thank you for joining us. So I have a few questions for you, and then I want to introduce you a little bit more in depth to our listeners. You are on TSN now, NESN, NBC. Who's doing your scheduling, and how do you keep it straight?
Well, I'm just trying to find a way to pay the bills, Gary, and I wanted to give it a real good shot. I wanted to get as much, you know, of a variety as I possibly could, and I think I've succeeded in that. Maybe bit off a little more than I can chew, or at least I feel some ways when I'm trying to fly back from Toronto at 6 o'clock in the morning that maybe I did a little too much. But it's been a great experience. TSN, I know you probably watched a little bit on trading deadline day, devotes as much time and energy to hockey as anybody. NBC is a great partner for the NHL. They got a great game upcoming Sunday, and Washington, with as much young talent on the ice as you'll find in any game in the league, and with Washington and Pittsburgh, with Malkin and Ovechkin and Semin and Backstrom and, you know, Crosby, and you just keep going on. So it's been fun for me to stick around the game, and obviously it's been great here at Nesson. We're doing the Toronto Bruins game tonight, and the Bruins have been a very pleasant surprise, and hockey interest is definitely on the upswing again in Boston, which is it's a fun thing.
It is a fun thing. With respect to your preparation and the things you say, do you vary it depending on whether or not you're on TSN, Nesson, or NBC, thinking that maybe your audiences are a little different, or do you just be yourself?
Yeah, well, I do, and it's not only the audiences, the bosses are different as well. You know, here at Nesson, obviously, they're going to want to hear a little bit more Bruin talk, and I couch myself a little bit. I try. I don't think you can fool Bruins fans. So if a guy's made a mistake and we're going to analyze the game, in fairness to the fans and making sure the broadcast is interesting, we analyze it. We'll talk about a bad line change or somebody that made some sort of mistake on the ice. But obviously we're looking for more things that are exciting and positive, and I think that's what makes for a better broadcast. If you're negative all day long, you know, who wants to watch it? It's that simple. So I do vary it. I think with Nesson and TSN, we're a little bit more. TSN really is, you can really wing it. NBC does a little bit more prep work, and we structure a little bit more, but I think we're loosening it up there too. And I think it makes, when there's an exchange on NBC with Pierre and I, who's one of the most informed broadcasters in the business, I think it makes for a good show. And so we're new to it, and I think we're getting better as the weeks go by. And I definitely think that the more spontaneous we can be, I think the better it is for the viewer.
Did I hear you couch it gently in saying that you're probably a little bit more biased when you're on the regional and more objective when you're on the national?
You could read it that way, but I would say this, that I probably temper my comments when it comes to criticisms a little bit more on Nesson broadcast, although you probably won't get that from Peter Chiarelli. You know, it's I mean, I'm still pretty blunt and I'm still pretty honest, but this is a Bruins network. It's owned by the Bruins, and we're trying to promote the Bruins. I'm not looking to nitpick at them, and I think that's a better way to put it.
Okay, just don't nitpick the officials. How about that? You grew up in.
Listen, you didn't see the show last night. You didn't see the show on TSN last night. Pierre and Bob McKenzie were giving the officials a tough time for that call in Philadelphia, where the Sabres got away with one. And I you don't have to comment on that, but they did. And I just
the
said,
too
hey,
the too many men on the ice.
Too many men on the ice. I said, it's going to happen. I said, here's your box of tissues. Get over it and move on to the next game. And, you know, I know Coley will take care of it. I've been the biggest supporter of officials since I'm not behind the bench.
Isn't it amazing how much better the officiating gets when you're not at a team?
Yes, it's really true. I mean, but you can't blame the coaches for displaying their passion. They don't have the benefit of three different replays when you're sitting in the analyst chair. So, and actually, I kind of like it when the coaches get upset. It makes me feel like I know that they care.
Well, speaking of that, in your career, you grew up in Massachusetts. You played college hockey at Colgate. You then went to the Bruins. You were, in addition to being a player, you were an assistant general manager, a coach with some considerable success, and a general manager. You've been at the Islanders as a general manager. Talk about the differences and what it takes to be in those different aspects of our game.
There's nothing like playing, Gary. I mean, to be in the pit and to be involved as you have to be on a daily basis, whether it's game day or not. I mean, I wasn't so talented that I could get away without practicing. It was a lot of hard work, but it was the intensity of the moments, and particularly not that the Garden here is in a great building now, but the old Boston Garden had so much character and history and charm. It was wonderful for me as a Boston area resident to come into the Garden and play in front of friends and family, and it was it was a wonderful ride. But, you know, if that doesn't last forever, the body wears and time goes by. And I think the second most intense experience that you can have is behind the bench, because Harry Sinden and I used to talk about it all the time. And he said, Mike, you know, as a manager, as a coach, the players will never care as much as you do. And I thought that odd when he first said it. But I came to accept it and agree with it. In fact, the players practice and go home and do what they do, and they go off for their summer vacations. But in the case of their coach, it's pretty much 24/7. Where are my problems? Where are my successes? How do I duplicate my successes? And with a manager, you know, he's got as much now to do in the summer as he does in January. I found the two best periods of time as a manager were training camp, when you were just sort of taking a look at your team and assembling things, and then playoff time, when the work was done and you were just participating with a coach and maybe talking about hockey stuff. So it's every age, every position has its benefits. There's nothing like playing, but when you get to the point when you can be a manager and you can manage, I guess is the right word, not only the on-ice product, but you've got a staff of scouts that might number as many as 20. You've got people in the office that you're dealing with. It's a different type of task and a more fulfilling task in some ways, but ultimately there's no place like being on the ice.
You were known as a general manager as a fairly prolific trader. What was the best trade you think you ever made, and the worst?
You know, it's funny. Probably the best one was a trade that was forced. As you well know, we had a parade of owners on Long Island until Charles Wong arrived. But my first 3 months or so on the job, first month actually, the owners came in and asked me to reduce the payroll by somewhere around 25% of what we had, which was shocking since it wasn't all that great at the time. But it forced me to deal with Wendell Clark and Matthew Schneider, and in return we got Kenny Onsen and their first round pick, which turned out to be Roberto Luongo. And that I thought was a pretty good deal for us, and I think it's measured up to the test of time. And, you know, I'm not going to call the Alexi Yashin deal the worst deal of my life, because, you know, when we made that deal, we had some other things going that fell through, but we wound up, really, it's more Yashin and Pekka at that moment. We gave up a lot in terms of our first pick, which turned out to be Jason Spezza and Zdeno Chara. So I winced at that one, but it was at the time we needed to get to the playoffs. We were, frankly, protecting my job, and we really did stamp Long Island as a hockey place again when Yashin and Pekka arrived on Long Island. So I'm not giving you my worst one, but it's one I had to think about every now and again.
Who do you like this year? Who do you think is going to emerge in the East, and who do you think is going to emerge in the West?
You know, it began with the runaway freight train of Ottawa in the East, and then they've all of a sudden, as you know, have stumbled into a situation that was so drastic that they had to fire the coach. The good news is Brian Murray is a very accomplished coach, and I think if anybody can get them back on track, it would be Brian. From the beginning, I like the Rangers. I like what Glenn Sather did in the offseason, and I liked what Chris Drury and Danny Briere Scott Gomez brought to the mix. And I thought that, you know, this was a team that was on the upswing, and I still think they flirt with it. They haven't put it all together, but I still think they have a sort of dark horse chance to come out of it. And of course, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention the Canadiens, whose speediness and creativity and imagination is a real thing of beauty on any given night. And meanwhile, in the West, our friend Mr. Burke has his team humming, although they ran into a pretty good team in Chicago last night. I think Anaheim has to be given the most consideration to come out of there, as they've, I mean, who'd have thought that once they lost Solani and Niedermeyer, that they would then get them back and also have, in addition to that, Bertuzzi and Matt Schneider. So they're certainly loaded, and I think Dallas did a great job at the trading deadline by adding Brad Richards, and they've been virtually unstoppable for the last couple of months. So I guess I'm not really answering your question. I think it's wide open in the East, and I think it's going to be a real dogfight in the West, which might be the advantage to the Eastern Conference champion in the long run.
And as we sit here in early March, we still have no idea who's going to be in the playoffs yet.
Yeah, don't you love that? I mean, that was, I'm sure you have to bring a smile to your face when you were talking to during the long days of the lockout, and then all of a sudden things started to come together, and you wanted teams that could compete, and both in a financial sense and on the ice, and it's pretty clear that that's worked out.
Boy, the competitive balance has been great. So when you were growing up in Massachusetts, could you ever have imagined spending over 30 years of your working life associated with professional hockey?
No, you know, I was about to graduate from Colgate, I had no idea what I was going to do, like just about everybody else I knew coming out of college. And I got a call from John Carlton from the Boston Bruins, an old scout, longtime scout, and he said, you know, at the time they had something called the negotiation list. That's when owners really had control, Gary. When you fell through the cracks of the draft, which I certainly did, they had the chance to put four players on a negotiation list, and they could randomly call in and change that list at any time as long as the player wasn't on somebody else's list. And they put me on the negotiation list. I got a chance to play with the old Boston Braves and had no contract, went to training camp, and you know, made an impression on first-year coach Don Cherry because I was a little rambunctious, and I stuck out for him. And, you know, after a couple of years in the minor leagues, I worked my way back to it, and the whole thing's been a dream. It's been a thrill. I like to comment that although I've had some tough days, I don't think I've ever had to work in my life.
I can see you and Don together. One last question to our listeners for Mike Milbury. I'd be remiss, and people would say I was being too soft if I didn't raise it. What happened in Madison Square Garden in 79?
That was the shoe incident you're referring to, and what happened was that we won a really good, tight, exciting game against the Rangers. And Madison Square Garden was no place to hang around at that particular time. There was a pretty rowdy crowd. Couple days before Christmas, so I beelined it into the locker room and sat down, and Jerry Cheevers and Rick Middleton came in behind me, and I said, "Where is everybody?" And they said, "Oh, there's some sort of beef going on out there." And I turned around and I went back, and I was, you know, I was in the Christmas spirit, ready to be going home and enjoy the trip and enjoy a few days off. And I ran back out to the Zamboni entrance, and all the guys had jumped over the stands or the glass and into the stands, and so my heart rate went from about 75 beats a minute to about 140, and I had no idea why I was in the stands and no idea who I was fighting or why I was fighting anybody. But ultimately I got to where Peter McNabb was standing, and in the heat of battle I wound up grabbing a guy's leg, and he kicked a little. I pulled his shoe off, gave him a quick whack on the thigh, and I was on national television for the next 2 days, and as I like to say, if it weren't for that, I would have no legacy at all, Gary.
I disagree with that completely, but it did cement everybody's belief in your passion for the game. Mike, we're going to let you go. Thanks for being with us.
My pleasure, Gary. Anytime.
Mr. Clement?
That is Mike Milbury. Yeah, you bet, Gary. And if you can't help but be a fan of Mike Milbury's. If you like people with passion, if you like people with opinions, and Mike's are always educated, you got to be a fan of Mike Milbury, and you can catch Mike Milbury and his NBC cohorts this Sunday at 12:30 Eastern. TSN is also carrying this game in Canada, and if you're into marquee names, you won't want to miss this when it's Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, the conference-leading Pittsburgh Penguins taking on Alex Ovechkin, who just happens to have 54 goals. He'll be flanked by Nicholas Backstrom, the hard-charging Washington Caps. That's Pittsburgh in Washington, 12:30 Eastern on NBC and TSN. We're going to step out. We appreciate your patience. We'll get to your calls. Gary is waiting to answer all of them in Utah as we speak. This is the NHL Hour on NHL Home Ice, XM 204 and NHL.com.
You're listening to NHL Hour with your commissioner, Gary Bettman. NHL Home Ice, XM 204.
That was a pretty good trick you guys just did.
How about that? You were talking about the doors for next week.
Holy cow, my wish is your command. I can't get over it.
Not mine, Gary. This is. We're going to go back to the phones. Fire. Believe me, I like the Doors too, though. Except when I played in junior, I had a roommate for an entire season that had one LP, and it was the Doors. And he played the Doors every single day. So there's some songs I like. There's some I hate. Let's get to the callers.
I don't see how that could have been a bad thing, Bill. Matt in Columbus, you're on with Bill and Gary. This is XM 204, and thanks for hanging in there.
Thanks, guys. Hey, Gary and Bill. How you doing?
Great, thanks.
We're good. How are you?
I have a question. I'm doing all right. It's another great day in Columbus.
I'm sorry. Let's get up the enthusiasm level.
Yeah, you don't work for the Chamber of Commerce there, do you?
No, but it's all right. There's hockey on tonight, so things are always getting better. Anyways, I'm a subscriber to the NHL Center Ice package, and I have been since last year, and I pay about $145 for that, which I think is really reasonable, and I get all kinds of hockey for it. I've been really happy with it. But now, since you have the NHL Network, when there are games on the NHL Network, they are not on Center Ice, and I do not get the NHL Network on my cable subscription. I'd have to pay more money each month. So I think it's kind of like a bait, you know, kind of a bad bait and switch to make people, you know, pay $145 to get all the games. Then you bring in this new network, and you want to make them pay more so they can watch the games that are on the NHL Network if they want to watch it. So,
who's your cable operator?
Time Warner.
Time Warner? Let us take a look into that. You make an interesting point. There may be a reason that's the case, or it may not be the case, in which case we have to do a better job of getting out the word. But I hear what you're saying, and we'll take a look into it and report back. Okay, Mark from Los Angeles, you're back on with a solution to the statistical question. Thank you for calling back, and tell me what it is.
I'm sorry, I lost you. Is there any thought given to the shooter who gets the deciding goal in a shootout to get credit for a game-winning goal?
In addition to the statistics we do now?
Well, they don't, like the Islanders have 27 game-winning goals, but they have 32 wins. So I assume they won 5 games in shootouts. I know that Jeff Tambellini just decided a shootout the other night, but yet he has no game-winning goals. So I see that you don't give credit to the shooter that gets the game winner in a shootout.
I wondered
if that was something that anyone would look at.
We kind of felt, in terms of the statistics, not to use the shootout stats, but to simply rely on the stats that take place in the course of a 60 or 65-minute game. And again, as I
but
said
before...
But a goaltender
gets a loss.
Well, because you're right. The wins and losses ultimately need to add up, and he gets a win as well. But we don't give the individual shooters credit for goals. We don't count it in keeping track of all the goals that a particular player scores, simply because that's the way we decided to do it. And we hadn't received up until this call much in the way of pushback on this issue. It's obviously something that I'm making a note of and we'll take another look at, and I appreciate you calling back to share that with us. Margaret in New York, you're on with Bill and Gary. This is XM 204.
Hi. I just want to say that I'm very disappointed in the way that Mike Milbury wasn't punished for saying that the New York fans are now more respectful when he said that on the Winter Classic. I don't understand why he would say that, because it's a very hurtful thing to say.
I didn't hear him say that. Bill, did you?
No, enlighten us. Exactly. I was broadcasting the game on NHL radio. What did you hear Mike say?
It was in between I believe the first and second periods, he was with Pierre Maguire, and they were talking about it, and he said that the New York Rangers fans are more respectful now, so that there shouldn't be any more problems.
Now compared to what?
Now compared to when the incident happened.
Oh, you're talking about the shoe incident.
Yeah.
Oh. Well, actually, okay. just to clarify, I actually believe I was there, so I wasn't watching the broadcast, but he was actually on in the first intermission with Bob Costas, and I think
I'm sorry, that's what I meant.
No, that's okay, and I don't think he was trying to be insulting, and knowing Mike, his tongue was probably firmly in his cheek, but since neither Bill nor I can recall the specifics of it, I'm going to have to take a look at it and try and figure out what he was saying and why. John in New York, you're on with Bill and Gary, XM 204. What can we do for you?
Yeah, Gary and Bill, I wanted to say, will there ever come a point where you guys might consider getting rid of fighting, or are we just going to wait till somebody gets killed? I know the fans love it. But I was at a Penguins-Leafs game last year where Ronald Petrovicki of the Penguins and Chris Newberry of the Maple Leafs went at it. Everybody's laughing, cheering, until Petrovicki punches him. He hits his head on the ice, and then it's not so funny anymore. And why does fighting have to be part of hockey? That's what I don't understand.
You know, fighting has always been a part of the game. It some years there's more fighting than others. Two years ago, we had our lowest fighting in 35 years. This year it appears to be up again, probably because teams are emulating the physical style of the Stanley Cup champion Ducks. It's always been a part of the game. It's something that most fans, I think, overwhelmingly tell us they think is a part of the game. And I think it would change the game in some pretty profound ways to simply say we're legislating it out of the game. I know fighting has its critics, but on balance, most of our fans understand the role that it has in the game. We haven't changed the rules in fighting basically for as long as I've been commissioner, which is more than 15 years. It's a question of the style of play that's being executed, and in a game that's extremely physical, extremely emotional, and virtually nonstop, you understand how occasionally you get a flare-up. Bill, you want to weigh in?
Yeah, I do. Enforcers got their name appropriately because they help enforce a code of conduct on the ice. You've got 165-pound players playing against 250-pound players, and somebody has to act as a deterrent or do things that deter the bigger players from really compromising the little guy's ability to exist. They don't want them to be taken advantage of. Enforcers have a role. Is it perfect? No, but we have little guys competing against big guys, and enforcers actually help to enforce a code of conduct to ensure that all players can compete. Unless you played the game, that's a hard concept to gather in and to wrap your head around. But having played for a dozen years as a pro, I think fighting has to be a part of the game.
And as I said as well, and I think that's a fair comment, it's something that most of our fans accept as a part of the game, and I think we would be fundamentally altering it in ways that a lot of fans wouldn't be too happy about. Mike in Boston, you're on with Bill and Gary, XM 204.
Hey, guys. How you guys doing?
We're good.
Doing
how are
good,
you?
Thanks.
Good. I just got a quick question regarding the division, like the division setup. I heard the past couple of years that you guys were talking about maybe changing like the alignments. I know there was some talk about Columbus, how they're in the Western Conference, maybe bringing them over to the East and setting it up like they used to have, like the two, like the two divisions. I didn't know if there was any talks going on about that recently. Or
well, the change we've made for next season is instead of having 10 interconference games, where it's possible that you won't see a division play for a particular season, we're going to move to 18 games interconference. We're going to reduce by two the number of in-division games. And in the interconference games, you will see every team at least once alternating from year to year, home and away. There didn't seem to be much of a mandate or desire to do more than that. And with respect to realignment, changing the divisions, If you move Columbus east, then somebody's got to go west, and nobody in the east had any interest in going west. And so it would probably take something dramatic like a relocation of a franchise for us to get a consensus to reorder the way we're aligned. Mark in Indianapolis, you're on with Bill and Gary. This is XM 204.
Hi, guys. How are you?
We're good. How are you?
I have a comment and a question. And first of all, my comment. Your show is great. I listen to it all the time. I would like to point out, though, on XM 204, we listen to guest interviews all day long. And I think the attraction of your show is to get to speak with you, Gary, by the fans. And so I would suggest that you remove the guest 20-minute segment off of your show and let it go to 60 minutes of questions, because I think that's what everybody wants. And now I'll give you my question, and then I'll hang up and listen. I have the Center Ice package on Dish Network, and when they show a limited number of HD games, obviously, because they only have so much capacity, but this happened the other night, and it happens quite often. I think it was the Pittsburgh-Tampa Bay game, they had the HD version of the game on for both the Capitals feed and the Penguins feed. So two HD versions of the same game, but then no other HD versions of other games. And so I think we need to, you know, tell Dish Network we don't need two HD versions of one game. We could use a second game on HD. So that's my comment, and I love your show. Thanks very much.
Thank you for the feedback. This notion of not interviewing someone, it's interesting, and maybe we should reduce the length of the interviews. What I try to do with the interviews is do it a little differently than you would typically hear on Sports Talk Radio, asking questions and giving the interviewees more of an opportunity to talk about things you might not necessarily hear about. But if we continue to get feedback that questions are better than interviews, then we'll have to change the format again. With respect to the Center Ice and HD, we will have to look into the specifics of that. Obviously, if there were other HD feeds available and they weren't being picked up as a matter of capacity, and instead one game had two feeds, I agree with you that probably doesn't make a lot of sense, but there's probably some better explanation, which I can't give you off the top of my head, as to why only those two feeds were in HD and not some others, and that's something we will look at in terms of how they do that as well. Long Mui from Edmonton, you're on with Bill and Gary.
Hi, how are you, sir?
Good, how are you?
Hi, how are you, sir? Good. I'm come from China. It is the first China fan calling in.
Welcome.
Hello.
Welcome.
Yes, I'll answer that question. I believe you are the first fan from China that's called in.
Oh. Okay, I just wondering, as the 2008 Olympic hold in Beijing and the NBA have a big success in China, so do the NHL have the plan for China? Like, second question, so what time we can watch the NHL game in China? And the third time, I'm an international student in the Edmonton right now. I'm a big hockey fan, and I want to help the NHL, like, into the Chinese marketing. So what can I do after I graduate?
Two things. One, we are exploring opportunities in China, both with respect to television and even the possibility of having some exhibitions of some sort. China is not obviously the most hockey-centric market, but we know it's a great opportunity. And so connect to NHL.com, and you should be able to get what you want in terms of broadband and other information relative to our game when you return home.
How about that? Our first fan from China. That'll do it for the NHL Hour. Phil Esposito and Jim Taddy are coming up next in the slot. We will be back with you at 4 Eastern next Thursday, right here on XM 204.